Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Dark Stories for the Dead of Night, Volume 1, Story 1. On our honeymoon, my husband and I traveled to a remote fishing village and rented a quaint cottage for privacy. Mark is an avid fisherman, and while I enjoy seafood, I prefer to read or write, while he enjoys his passion. Once we arrived, we unpacked and lit a fire in preparation for a romantic wedding night. A thunderstorm started whipping up, and we decided to huddle in front of the fire and share haunted stories, for fun. Later on, while Mark slept soundly, I tossed and turned, experiencing extreme anxiety for some reason. Not wanting to disturb him, I got up and padded down to the kitchen to make a soothing cup of peppermint tea. While I sipped my tea, I heard tapping on the glass door. At first I thought it was a branch from one of the trees. It only took me a minute to realize that the tapping was coming from what I thought were human knuckles. I went over to the door slowly, dropping my tea as a flash of lightning lit up the patio, revealing a figure at the door. I screamed when I saw her terrifying face. As the lightning continued to flash, I saw a wild-haired female with her palms on the glass, glaring intently at me. I yelled, "What do you want?" Watching her crazy curly hair thrashing around in the wind while she focused on me. Chills ran down my spine when her mouth stretched into an evil grin. Then she slammed the glass with her hands. I ran up the stairs and woke Mark up, pleading with him to follow me downstairs and confront the woman. He raced down ahead of me and protectively held his hand out to hold me back before going to the door. I looked over his shoulder and saw that she had disappeared. He turned the lights on and grabbed a flashlight. He told me to stay put while he searched the property. I stood shaking in fear as I waited for him to return. When he came back inside dripping wet, he was a little peeved with me. "There's nothing out there." I tried to explain that I hadn't hallucinated the woman, but he talked me into coming back to bed with him. He was soon snoring away, and I continued to lie there in a full-blown state of anxiety while the storm raged on. I began to finally drift off to sleep as the tapping began again. I didn't wake Mark because I didn't want to annoy him. Did telling haunted stories stir up our ghost? I got up and slowly crept down the stairs. When I reached the bottom, I peered around the corner to look at the door. I could still hear the tapping, but she wasn't there. I crept closer to the door and puzzled over where she was. Turning around to turn the lights on, I couldn't believe my eyes. There she was, inside the house, glaring at me. I screamed and backed against the door, horrified to still feel the tapping on the glass while she stomped towards me. The lightning continued flashing while her hair flowed around her face, whipped up by the wind now blowing inside. She was dripping wet, and her evil eyes were staring and menacing, her mouth once again stretched into an evil grin. Too petrified to scream again, I slid down the door and started shaking uncontrollably while her mouth opened wide. Horrified to see she had no teeth, her mouth was like a deep black hole, and I felt like I was being sucked in. A terrible sound, like a hellish vortex, filled the air while the woman closed in and leaned over me. I thought I was going to be absorbed through her mouth. I felt like I was swirling upwards until the lights came on. I opened my eyes and saw Mark looking down. The creepy, ghostly woman was gone, but to this day, I can still feel the terrifying vortex waiting for me. Story number 2. It seems so pointless and ungrateful for me to even complain about what most people would say is nuts, but I have a theory that my 15-year-old isn't my son. I'm not saying that I think he was either switched at birth or that my wife cheated on me back then, but he and I don't click at all. Don't get me wrong. He looks like me, sounds like me and even acts like me at times, especially when he's angry or finds something amusing. People are always praising my wife and I for raising such a perfect, well-mannered, intelligent, and good-looking boy who cares about the world and all creatures great and small. If you ask me, he's a little too perfect. Even when he loses his temper, he's thoughtful and soon apologizes. Some would say that we have a perfect life. We're well off, and we live in a beautiful home which is taken care of by my wonderful wife. Some say we're so lucky that it hurts. But I'd give anything to have what other people have, even if it meant being poorer. I enjoy seeing the trials and tribulations of others. That's what life is supposed to be all about. But my wife doesn't agree. She loves how perfect her little angel is and goes on and on about how wonderful he is. It makes me want to vomit and scream. The only time she ever lost her temper was 6 months ago, when I told her about a vivid dream I had. It started with my son being a year old again. I went into his room and saw the window open with the curtains flying and flapping about. I went over to close the window when I felt the hairs on my neck prickle. I slowly turned and saw an evil-looking shadow person leaning over the crib. My instincts kicked in and I raced over to the crib, but the creature grabbed my son up and leapt out of the window. I yelled for my wife as I ran down the stairs to apprehend the creature as my son screamed in terror. When I made it outside, she came up behind me with our son on her hip. Both were smiling sweetly at me. After that dream, I woke up crying and saying that I finally knew what happened to our son, that we'd been left with a changeling from the other side. My wife was so enraged she slapped me across the face. She was so hurt that she began to cry. I comforted her and tried to shake the dream off. I'll never forget the next morning at breakfast when my son gave me the strangest smile. He said, "I love you, Father." "You know that, right?" I gulped and nearly choked on my coffee because I was so chilled by the undertone of his trained voice. "Yeah, I know that, Daniel. I love you too." I watched as he stared right through me with his pale green eyes before he looked back at his eggs with a satisfied smile. Just yesterday, we went to a crazy New Age festival, which my wife loves to attend. She and Daniel put on crazy hats and danced with the other nuts while I sipped some god-awful herbal smoothie. I nearly choked when I saw a boy watching me from the other side of the field. Something about his eyes and the wistful way he looked at me pulled at my heartstrings. I started to move towards him, but in an instant he was gone. I could have sworn I saw a dark figure leading him away. I was then distracted by Daniel, who gave me an almost threatening look. "Father, aren't you going to join in?" he asked in a menacing tone. When I saw the pained look in my wife's eyes, I gave in and took his hand. Sure, I smiled. I kept telling myself, "Someday, soon." Story number 3. My best friend Sasha committed suicide 5 years ago. At 27, she was an identical twin to Sarah. Even though we'd never been that close, Sarah and I soon gravitated towards each other in order to cope. We formed an even closer bond than the one I had with Sasha, which has made me feel a little guilty at times. Still, her parents were very grateful for our new friendship, which helped with the grieving process. One thing has become a nagging issue, though. To this day, Sarah still doesn't like talking about Sasha and does not like to see any photos or videos of her twin. At first, I assumed it was the grief. I soon discovered how temperamental she could be. When her mother asked if I could help sort through Sasha's stuff, Sarah was annoyed. It went on over 4 weekends. Each week was harder and harder. Not only did I have to deal with the resurgence of grief, I had Sarah in my face. Every Friday night, I had to fend off Sarah's alcohol-fueled phone calls and threats of never speaking to me again. It wasn't until the 4th weekend when I discovered why she was so hostile. It was while I sorted through a final box. Inside was a large bag filled with bundles of letters. Sarah's mom left her room, so I took the opportunity to check them out. They were all addressed to Sarah from Sasha. My blood ran cold when I opened one of them up. The writing was scrawled and erratic. It was a threat. telling Sarah that it was time to go. Puzzled, I began checking the other letters. They were all the same, threatening Sarah to end it all, as there was only room in their family for one daughter. Becoming ill, I was then distracted by a photo. I screamed when I saw Sasha's lifeless body hanging in the family shed. I knew that Sasha had killed herself in that way, in that location. The problem was, Sarah was in the photo, standing next to her sister and smiling triumphantly. Millions of thoughts flooded my mind. If Sarah was being threatened, why was she the one still living? Then it hit me. Sarah was the one who died. The only reason we assumed the remaining twin was Sarah was the birthmark on her cheek, a pale silver crescent moon only a centimeter across. The fact that Sarah was a makeup artist for a film production company made perfect sense. My best friend killed her twin sister and made it look like suicide, then took her place. While this was all dawning on me, I heard footsteps racing into the room. I looked up and saw Sarah, who was really Sasha, smiling in a strange way. She leaned over and snatched the bag out of my hands. "We won't need to hang on to that stuff, will we?" She also slowly pulled the photo out of my hand and tossed it into the bag. Then she reached down and brushed my hair away from my face with a menacing look in her gray eyes. "Best friends for life, right?" she asked. Even though I knew I was in the presence of a killer, I had no idea what to do. When her mom came into the room with a tray of lemonade and cookies, Sasha took a glass after tossing the bag next to the door. "Thanks, Mom. This must have been hard for you both. I'm sure Sasha is watching over us." She sipped her lemonade while looking right at me. All I could do was go along with it. I saw Sasha take the bag and throw it into the trunk of her car. By then, I was planning to call the cops as soon as she was gone, but she seemed to be able to read my thoughts. She hissed into my ear while digging her fingers into my arms. "This isn't my first rodeo, bitch. So you need to keep your mouth shut, okay?" Then she traced her finger across her throat for emphasis. I nearly screamed. Over her shoulder was an apparition. It was Sarah. Her ghostly finger came up to her mouth to silence me. I saw her slightly bent neck as she mouthed the word, "Wait." "Now I'm waiting for further instructions." Next story. This happened when I was a teenager, living on the outskirts of a Midwestern town with my uncle and his wife. Everything was boring back then, and there was nothing to do for a girl who was homeschooled after her parents passed away. My uncle and aunt were great, as they often left me alone to get wasted. Funny when I think of it now, because I sometimes broke into their stash and smoked a blunt here and there to pass the time. What I wasn't expecting were the fights that started up after I turned 15. My uncle started wailing on my aunt, but she was a big woman, and she gave the same back. They blamed each other about the weed always disappearing. For the life of me, I didn't know why they never suspected me, but I kept my mouth shut. After a particularly brutal fight one night, I woke up and saw that my uncle wasn't home. My aunt shrugged and said that he finally left her. From then on, it was awesome, even though I missed him. My aunt and I cooked together, shopped together, and really got to know each other. She even let me move into the abandoned trailer they had at the back of the property so I could have friends over, according to my aunt. I didn't have any friends, so I was kind of pissed with the statement, but still, it was great to have a place of my own at such a young age. The thing was, I could never get used to the smell. My aunt said it was probably because raccoons or possums nested there until she cleaned it up. After 2 weeks, it got to be too much. I told her that the smell shouldn't be building up, that it should have been going away by then. She shrugged and told me to use air fresheners, which only made the stench stronger, in my opinion. That was when the nightmare started. My uncle appeared at the foot of my bed. I'd wake up screaming, but the next night, the same nightmare returned. In one, my uncle was pointing downwards and had blood dripping from the neck down. When I told my aunt, she froze for a second, but then she shook it off and said I was just experiencing separation anxiety. What happened next still chills my flesh. I was playing with the next-door neighbor's dog, who came from a mile away to have me throw a ball for him. The ball rolled under the trailer and the dog went under through a hole. He soon came out without the ball and yelping like he'd been hit with something. I crawled under and saw the ball next to something wrapped in a tarp. Stupid me, I pulled at it. My uncle's face appeared under the flap, frozen in a terrified gasp, with his milky blue eyes wide open and speckled with blood. His neck was gaping, and I couldn't stop screaming. I backed out and raced after the dog. When I got to my neighbor's house and told him what happened, a cruel smile spread across his ugly face. He told me that he and my aunt knew that I was the one taking the weed, but it was the perfect opportunity to get rid of my uncle. I swore I'd keep the secret to myself, but I'm waiting for them to pass on before I tell the cops. Next story. For many years, my husband Alan, his brother Sean, and I have enjoyed getting into the great outdoors, which includes a lot of hiking and fishing, especially for my brother-in-law, who considers himself a kind of expert in fly fishing. When we camped by a beautiful secluded river last spring, Sean was ecstatic. Alan and I woke up early one morning and decided to go for a hike and do some wild strawberry picking. Naturally, Sean declined as he wanted to try his luck again with fly fishing the pristine river. The day turned out to be glorious, so we decided to keep hiking and picking while Sean continued fishing. It was almost twilight when we returned to camp, and as soon as we arrived, I had a feeling that something wasn't right. Our tents were undisturbed, and nothing seemed out of place, apart from the fact that Sean was missing. Alan found his line and gear on the banks of the river, and slowly panic started creeping in. We searched high and low, well into the night, using our flashlights. Just as we were about to give up and call the authorities, we heard yelling coming from the river. We scrambled down the mountain and past the tents and skidded to a stop when we saw something emerging from the water. At first, it looked like a mud monster, staggering out from the water and then falling to its knees. When Sean's voice groaned loudly, we knew that it was him. Alan yelled to me about getting a blanket while he ran over to his brother. On my way over with a blanket, I saw that Sean was completely naked. He was covered in mud, but when Alan told him to go with him to the river to wash it off, he screamed, "No!" Alan and I looked at each other, not knowing what had happened, as Sean wouldn't speak after that. We wrapped him in the blanket and sat him in front of the fire. It took a while before he told us what happened. We had left to go hiking, and Sean had started setting up to fish when he heard something in the middle of the river, like a gurgling sound. Thinking that it was either a drowning animal or a freak whirlpool, he put on his waders and made his way into the water. He said that the last thing he remembered was being dragged under. While we listened to his story, he began to shudder and shake his head like he was trying to shake off a terrible memory. When we pressed him to go on, he finally blurted that he had been attacked by a monster. Alan and I looked at each other, obviously thinking the same thing, that Sean was hallucinating. We gave him a warm cup of cocoa and soon got him off to sleep. The next morning, Alan was about to take him to the edge of the river to wash the mud off. My blood froze when Alan yelled for me to come over. I couldn't believe the horrible scratches, gouges, and bite marks on Sean's flesh. He looked like he was covered in bizarre markings. There were strange circular rashes on his torso, which Sean explained while sobbing that they were marks left by the monster's tentacles. There were strange scratches up and down his legs, like he'd been whipped by a cat o' nine tails, and many deep cuts. The freakiest wounds were the bite marks, which looked more like he'd been bitten by large bird beaks. As we cleaned them up and administered first aid, we heard a strange gurgling, bubbling sound coming from the river. Sean started screaming and racing up the mountain before he even got dressed. Alan jumped up and started packing our gear without even checking out the creepy sounds. He said to me, "We're not waiting to find out. Let's go." It wasn't long before we raced after Sean back to safety. All three of us still don't have the guts to go back and figure out what happened that day or what unholy creature lives in the river. Next story. I nearly didn't share this story as I'm concerned about the effects in those who might be in the same position as I was. Having isolated myself from friends and family after losing my job many years ago, I morphed into an angry woman. Slowly and surely, I descended into a mental state where fury and hatred colored my interactions with other people. What I'm about to share is more real than any of the haunted stories you might hear. It's much worse. Some might say that it was a hallucination. Others might say that I'm insane. Maybe it's both, but it did happen. It started when I had another argument with my neighbor, where I blew my stack and threatened to deal with him. I felt like I'd been possessed by a demon, as I'm usually quite mild-mannered, so I left the house and went for a walk. There's a greenway close to where we live, and I soon found myself storming along the path as I swore and fumed. I didn't notice that the path wasn't gradually curving like it was supposed to. I was preoccupied with venomous hate. Every step filled my mind with obsessive murderous thoughts, like a mental hit list about who I wanted to hurt. Normally, I would have stopped in shock or thought that it was the sunset, but my frame of mind propelled me forward. It was like I was being drawn into the pit of hell, as terrifying images of torture, horror, and murder filled my head. As I got closer, I began to see balls of fire shooting out of the portal, landing several yards in front of me. They suddenly formed into flaming demons who encouraged me to keep going by waving and gesturing with glee. Usually, I would turn and run at top speed, but I welcomed their presence as their evil energy fueled my fury. Passing each demon and feeling them fall in behind me gave me an incredible sense of power and righteousness. Getting closer to the fiery portal, I had images in my mind of all the people I wanted to inflict serious pain onto. I saw my neighbor scream in terror as the flames consumed him, and my boss crying and writhing in torturous agony. Laughing like a psychotic madwoman, I saw all the people in my life being picked off one by one, howling loudly. I could feel my slathering mouth hanging agape at all the hellish imagery in my hands rubbing together excitedly. Haunted stories were created as I killed my enemies in my mind. I looked into the portal and felt the blistering heat on my face as millions of screaming souls became visible. One face stood out. It was my mother, crying and pleading with me to stop before being dragged into the void. Suddenly, it was as though a bolt of lightning shot through my body as my mother had passed away years before. I realized that I was allowing my twisted and angry thoughts to deliver me into the hands of the devil himself. Trying to pull away, I felt scorching hands pushing me forward as the demon screamed, "You must enter!" Then I saw the most horrifying face I'd ever seen. It was the devil. He laughed as I struggled to pull back. The demons continued yelling and pushing me forward as I frantically dug my heels in, screaming and crying. In my mind, I screamed to the heavens, pleading for help and forgiveness, promising to change my ways. I knew that I had to make amends and forgive those who trespassed and hurt me. Then I saw them covered in light, imagining them lifting up and out of my murderous thoughts. I felt a cool breeze rush through my body and soul. Slumping to the ground, I heard the final deafening screams from the devil and his demons as I fainted away. When I came to, I realized that I'd barely escaped hell and was granted heavenly reprieve as I wept tears of joy. Next story. Growing up, our family farm backed onto the woods of an old penitentiary that was finally closed down and vacant. As a child, I was warned to stay away from that part of our property, and Dad even built a high wall to block it out. Seeing as our farm was 22 acres with lots to see and do, I wasn't interested, so it wasn't a big deal for me. It was a nightmare I had on a winter's night when I was 14, which was the spark that ignited my curiosity. I dreamed that a frightening monster chased me down a dark corridor, looking very much like an Egyptian mummy. His muffled moaning was creepy, but the eyes looking out from the palms of his outstretched hands terrified me. When I awoke, I felt a strong sensation of fascination mixed with horror. That had something to do with the prison. It had been snowing, and there was at least 5 inches of snow on the ground when I decided to check it out. I crept along the wall and kept going until I found the stile, then climbed over and landed on the grounds of the prison. I immediately felt like I was walking in a dead zone. The atmosphere was so different that it seemed like I was in another dimension, or at least a parallel world. As I walked across the field, which soon stretched into an asphalt compound, I saw the tall, rusted wire fencing. It didn't take long to find a hole in the fence, so I stepped through and made my way to the back of the building. I had to try several doors before I found one that was unlocked, but I hesitated as the fear was growing. The handle was freezing, but I attributed that to the fact that the temperature was in single digits and snowing. After a few pulls, I was able to wrench it open. I looked inside and saw the dark interior and littered floors. I took a few careful steps and was struck by the paint hanging from the walls and ceiling in strips trailing on the floor. There were several upturned chairs and tables here and there as I wandered through the huge building and halls. Suddenly, I heard the sound of metal doors clanging and slamming shut, and I realized that I'd been stupid to come. The thing was, I couldn't remember exactly where I'd come in, so I started to do my best to retrace my steps. I heard moaning that was creepy and familiar. I didn't start running until I heard fast shuffling across the floor. When I turned around, there was nothing there, but I turned back and continued running, just in case. Then the moaning got louder as several doors started opening and slamming in the distance, so I bolted for the door. I found that it was stuck, and I wasn't even sure if it was the door I'd used to get in, so I ran off to find another one. I could hardly breathe due to the rising panic, and I screamed when I heard the shuffling behind me getting closer. Spinning around to see what it was, I was angry to see nothing there, so I yelled, "Who's there? Who are you?" I was even angrier when the building suddenly grew silent. So silent that it nearly hurt my young ears. Turning around and stomping off, I screamed again when I saw a large piece of wallpaper unfurl from the wall. Running faster now, I tried every door and window I came across, but they were stuck and refused to budge. Dried pieces of paint began to drop from the ceiling all around me. It was so dark that I was now running blindly. I didn't see the chair as I stumbled over it and hit my head on the floor. It was a while before I sat up, stunned. I didn't see the shuffling apparition coming straight at me. I heard the moaning getting louder and louder while the shuffling began to slow down. Then I saw bandaged feet. They were right in front of me. When I looked up, I realized I was looking at the man from my nightmare. Trying desperately to scramble backwards, I felt the chair against my back and jamming into the wall behind me. The monster moved towards me as I tried to get away, but I didn't want to stand up in case he grabbed me. Panting for breath, I tried to roll left and right in order to try and crawl to a position where I could get up and run. The problem was, everywhere I tried to go, the monster stepped in the way, moaning loudly and waving his hands. I could see the eyes on its palms, blinking at me as they waved past my face. I began to cry, helpless and hopeless. He fell to his knees in front of me, reached his hands out, and held his palms up so the eyes were close to my face. I saw his dark mouth moving under the bandages, opening up and moaning loudly as his palms clasped my face. Screaming in terror, I felt the eyes melting with mine in an unholy visual union, creating a kind of second sight. I was able to see the monster's reality and was shocked to find myself watching his own life flashing in my mind. There was a young man who was mute and considered by the community as mentally handicapped and dangerous. He was blamed for a crime he didn't commit and then incarcerated, often vilified and tortured by the wardens. The man was kept in solitary confinement for long stretches at a time, and the treatment made him lose his mind. Even though he was mute, he was incredibly intelligent, but the madness soon corrupted him and made him insane. After decades of torture and neglect, he finally succumbed to exposure when he was wrapped up and left for dead. The cruel wardens were assisted by some of the inmates who bound him in bedsheets and threw him down a well. I remembered seeing a well as I'd crossed a field before I got to the compound, but then I saw another flash. I could see the man trying to unravel the sheets, and he shredded them in the process while trying to climb out. His thoughts then penetrated my brain, telling me, "Feel what I see. See what I feel. Tell them I'm good. I'm good." I screamed, "Who are you?" as I cried for him as well as myself. Then he told me, "I don't remember." I asked, "How can I tell him if I don't know who you are?" I heard moaning and sobbing as the shuffling began. I was now standing next to the chair and saw him shuffling away from me, still moaning and crying. I yelled, "Please tell me. I can help you." Then he disappeared. I jumped when a nearby door suddenly opened. It took a while for me to decide to leave as I wondered if I should go and try to find him, but then thought better of it. I quickly got out of there and made my way home. Then I tried to conduct research via many avenues with no results. When I told my parents, they said it was just a dream, and I was grounded for a month. But I'll always remember him.